At Vertex, we know the pace of global commerce is increasing, which makes managing tax more complex. And your enterprise systems weren't built to handle all that tax complexity. This is where we come in, with our single platform that's built for continuous compliance, giving you automated reporting, more accuracy in your data, and more transparency across all your transactions. To learn more about Vertex and continuous compliance, visit vertexinc.com/comply with confidence.
Earlier on, I mentioned that today's episode is sponsored by Marching Powder, the new all-action-packed big-screen comedy starring Danny Dyer. And guys, I genuinely believe this could be one of my top films of this year. It has got absolutely everything I love when I go to the cinema. Comedy, action, and even a cheeky bit of romance. For any fans of The Football Factory, I'm sure you'll agree, it's also nice to see Danny Dyer reunited with director Nick Love as they work their magic together once again. I cannot wait to see Diary Jack in the film. Anything bold, cheeky and outrageous is always getting my attention. Don't miss out, guys. Why not go with your mates or make a date? Whatever floats your boat. But either way, make sure you get your tickets to Marching Powder. Only in cinemas, March 7th.
This is the Men's Room Podcast with me, Tom Skinner, alongside the legend, and that is the 17th hardest footballer of all time, Neil Razor Ruddock. A reminder, you can see us and all of our amazing guests with your own eyes over on the TalkSport YouTube channel. Now, let's get into this week's podcast. Doing you lovely, lovely people. Now we're back again, and I don't know how they've let us, but they have. And this is the Men's Room Podcast with TalkSport, and I've got the fabulous Mr. Neil Razor Ruddock here next to me, eating his bacon sarnie. And of course, we've got a special guest today. He is the absolute governor, the omen, Mr. Spencer Oliver.
He is special, him.
He's special. He is special.
Guys, don't even go.
Me and him are sensible. Compared to him, the only guest we've had that me and you are sensible.
Be careful, you'll fill yourself up.
How you been, mate? Good?
Really good.
Yeah. Listen, thank you for coming on. We're buzzing to have you here. But before I went to bed last night...
What?
Before I went to bed last night, I had an early night. Put the babies in bed, sat there, relaxed, little bath, got on the phone. I thought, do you know what? I'm going to Google Spencer. Just have a little read up. So I'm a professional in the podcast, you know what I mean?
I don't know where this is going.
I didn't have to Google him because I knew who he is. And
no, I know exactly who he is, but I thought
career,
I will come here and be like top form today.
Why?
Well, anyway.
Why is this the first one you're going to be top form on? The other one you just turned
up. Spencer.
Okay.
So I've done that and I've fallen asleep tired, went a bit nice and early. I had a dream about you.
What?
Why, this is a wrong podcast, mate.
I had a dream about you. This, and that is why it's called The Men's Room.
Was it a nightmare?
Wow. Okay. I don't know if I do, sir.
You're going to love it. So, obviously, you know, the news UK boom where talks is next to the Shard, right? And I don't know why, but me and you went, and I'm scared of heights, but me and you have gone to the top of the Shard.
Yeah.
Well, this dream was not real then. Because we've gone to the top of the Shard, and we've got out of thing, and we've parachuted down into level 17 on TalkSport building. Yeah. And like I was working on a show. I don't know, I was just doing the radio with you. It was bizarre. Then I woke up, and it weren't real, unfortunately. You weren't in the dream. You didn't make it.
You know why I don't put your own parachute big enough.
But yeah, so thank you for coming on.
Yeah,
I've been dreaming about you, and now you're
here.
It's like Matthew Everton all over again.
I love you, Matthew. Oh, no. We had Matthew Everton on the other week, like newspaper, where Sam's like that.
Oh, hello, Matthew.
have you ever had anyone admit they've had a dream?
No, do you know what? And if someone has said to me, I've had a dream about you, you genuinely get a little bit excited, you know?
Yeah. No,
go on in you go. It's the first time I've been
parachute.
A little bit...
Yeah, we just parachuted off the Shard.
You parachuted the top of the Shard into Tom's
I took towers. Spencer Oliver up the Shard. That don't sound right, does it? In my dreams. And we jumped off the side.
Yeah. I think it's time to get on with the pod.
In my dream, I took Spencer Oliver up the Shard.
Welcome to the Men's Room Podcast. over the past few episodes, we've been talking everything men's mental health, and we've been discussing some tricky topics, you know, and we're all normal people, and we've all had sort of different things happen, and we're excited that Spencer's here, because Spencer, you've had a, you know, a good career in boxing, on Talksport, and obviously you had something happen to you that we'd like to talk about today.
So basically, yeah. You died for 2 weeks.
Yeah, basically. I got a blood clot to the right side of my brain in my last fight, May 2nd, 1998, at the Royal Albert.
But there was no pre, you didn't have any problems before. Did you get checked? I mean, there was no checks, you just happened on that night.
Yeah, it's a crazy story, obviously. I'll start from the beginning. So, turned professional in 1995, and things moved really quickly for me. As in, like, I won a European title quicker than anyone's ever won it. Adam Azim actually just beat that. I held that title for 26 years or something like that. Yeah, mad. Like, that's how quick I was moving. Opportunities were coming up. I remember I boxed a guy called Patrick Mullins in my 9th fight, and it was a kid that used to bash me up all the time in the gym. He was a senior ABA champion, I was junior ABA champion. And so, when we both turned pro, he was doing really well. He went like sort of 10 unbeaten, I was 9 unbeaten. We was always going to collide at some point. It was a local derby. I was from Barnet, he was from Harrow, so we always had that rivalry. And the fight come up, and he was with Frank Maloney. I was with Jess Harding at the time, and the fight come up for the Southern Area title. Now, in the back of my head, I'm thinking it's going to be a bit tough, this one, because I'd done really well.
Was that a good thing, though?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? You're out of training, you think, oh, this is going to be a tough thing. You know what I mean? If it was the other way around, you think, oh, I'm going to just stop. You won't train as hard. Do you know what I mean?
Do you know what is raised? Boxing is psychological. It's 20% physical and 80% mental boxing.
Yeah. Same as football.
When you get into those penultimate rounds, it's not about the physicalities and, like, it's all about the mental strength. Who can bite down their gumshoe the most? And so, going into that fight, he's thinking, I used to bash you up.
Yeah.
He's like, when I was 15, he was like 20, so I was junior ABA champion, he was senior ABA champion, so he was a tricky southpaw, quick hands, good fighter, to be fair. He went on to win a IBO world title, British champion and whatnot. But, so I'm thinking, this is a hard fight, but the boxing papers and all the boxing writers and whatnot were like, yeah, Spencer wins this fight in 6 rounds, because that obviously
so the
kid,
pressure's
they were pushing.
On. The pressure's
so
on.
So I come back from the Commonwealth Games, won a silver out in Canada, and like,
so
yeah.
All the press are back you, and you're thinking, hold up, we used to be fuck out.
Yeah, but they don't know that. This is a lot of pressure on my shoulders. So I'm going, but he's then on the flip side, he's thinking, I used to bash you up, mate. We're going to see about that. Yeah. So then we're doing the big build-up.
That's a double barrel.
Yeah, it's a double barrel. But effectively, it worked better for me, because I'm thinking, when I went in there, like, so I trained, like, I used to train like a demon anyway, and I knew that Pat weren't the best liver. So he didn't really train. He had a lot of natural talent, but, you know, he used to live a little bit of a wild life, and he'd go out and whatever. So I knew this. So, yeah. Anyone else like that? Yeah.
No, not me.
No, so anyway, I knew this. We obviously both trained really well for the fight, and so we get into the fight, and I'm thinking, if he hits me with 3, I'm going to hit him with 4. If he hits me with 4, I'll hit him with 5. And that was my mentality. So we get in there, and it's going. We won fight of the year in 1997. It was a proper ding-dong. I ended up knocking him out in the 10th round. Funny enough, I live 5 minutes from this place now. It's coming around. So we get in there, and it's fucking packed. There's people sitting there. They've well oversold the place, because it's this local rivalry, and everyone knows it's going to be a good fight stylistically. So, because it was a vacant title, it was a toss of a coin who won for the first ring walk and second ring walk. So I've got to go first. So I go in there, and there's bodies everywhere, they're screaming. I'm in there, and so I'm warming up. And then he comes out, spotlight comes on him, song comes up, ready or not, here I come, you get hurt, right? So I'm in the middle of the ring thinking, can you swear on it?
Yeah, of course you can.
You just swore twice.
I'm in the middle of the ring and I'm thinking, fucking hell, this is going to be hard. And I can see him coming out, so like this little guy, and he's got his dreadlocks and he's there, and I'm thinking, oh, mate. So I'm shadow boxing, I'm looking at him, so he gets in the ring and I'm thinking, I've got to do this geezer, because I'm not thinking about the cameras that are on me, like, because it was on Sky, I'm thinking about everyone that's in the room, and I'm thinking, I can't lose this fight. Anyway, the first bell goes, he comes out like a steam train. I'm on the ropes like that, and I'm thinking, you got to do something here, mate. This could be an early night. So then I come back at him, and that's pretty much how it went. And then that's what I say when we talk about the physicalities of something. You go, we get into round 2, round 3, and we're both just pummeling away, and so it's getting really tough. And then we get into the 10th round, we come out and he sort of throws me on the ropes, and I'm winning the fight anyway, so I'm comfortably up. I'm like 7-2 up at this point, I say, but they were close rounds. It didn't really tell the story of the fight. So I'm thinking, all I've got to do is survive here, and I've won the fight. So yeah. I've come out on the back foot, I'm moving around, and he comes at me like a steam train, because he knows he needs the knockout for the win. So he comes to me, and as he comes in, we have a clash of heads, and it splits my eye here. And so when I say, I'll show you after,
Clara,
you see
everywhere.
It's everywhere, it's gone, but we've got about 2 minutes left in the round. But so he's come at me like a lunatic, but he's shot his bolt in doing it. He's blown a gasket, right? So he's gone like that. And so I've seen him gas a little bit, and I've hit him with a right hand, left hook, right hand, and he's gone. And I thought, just jump on him. But at this point, we're both like gone. We've both like, we've left everything in the ring. There's nothing left. But you find that little bit of energy from somewhere. I see him like, have a little stagger, and I just jumped at him and just knocked him through the ropes, and it was over and done.
Can you tell, through a fight, can you tell that they get tired, the punches ain't as hard as they were?
Do you know what
would happen in a boxing match?
You get a feeling, like...
When the gas out, was that tiredness or his punches weren't as hard?
No, I hit him with a combination. I see his legs buckle a little bit. Yeah. And so as soon as I saw that, I thought, I knew where I was. And I thought, there's no way. Because I left no stone unturned. I thought, this is what I had. This is the mental strength I had going in there. I went, there's no way he can be fitter than me because he couldn't have trained harder than me. It's not possible. So if I'm tired, he's got to be tired. So if he hits me a three, I've got to hit him a four. So even if he's not showing it, I know he's got to be gone because I'm gone. And that was your strength. So it becomes a mental battle. So you think, he's got to be tired because I'm absolutely fucked here. So he's got to be. And so then, but then what happens, Ray, is when you feel someone cracking, you like, you might hit him with a body shot and you'll hear you might hear a any little thing, and you think, got him. Do you know what I mean? Oh, and that was what it was. I went like that, and I thought, this is it now. Because you don't, in your mind, you're thinking, there can't be long left. And I'm jumping on him, and anyway, the fight was over. And that was sort of the beginning of everything. Off the back of that fight, that was for a Southern Area title, and off the back of that fight. So I go away, I'm on holiday, I'm in Tenerife.
I love Tenerife.
I'm in Tenerife, getting lagged up, and everything's going on brilliant. I get the phone call from my manager. Oh, mate, Spence, great news. We've got a European title shot. I went, that's moving a bit fast. So I went, European title shot.
I better have another drink.
Yeah. I've got some guy called Fabrice Benichou.
How do you remember these names?
So I boxed this guy, Fabrice Benichou, who was a two-time world champion, two-time European champion. He was on a comeback trail. So again, he was just a tough geezer. So I'm getting all these characters put in front of me. I'm only a young kid, right? Mm. So I'm giving it the big.
How old are you now? So
20... I'm still 21, just turned. Still 21, just coming up 22.
Wow.
I think.
So that is like.
Oh,
quick.
It's mad.
Quick.
Yeah, it's like I was breaking all boundaries at the time. So I boxed this Fabrice Benichou, and he's been there, seen it, done it. Yeah. He's like, he was about 35 at the time or something. And we have the press conference again. He's come over, so I'm thinking, right, perfect. He's on the comeback trail. Perfect name. He's beat some great fighters in the past. He's been a world champion. It's good for the CV. He comes in, same thing. I'm looking at him. He takes his top off. This is a mad thing. He takes his top off, and when he's doing this thing, he's got toes everywhere and all that. And you know, it's a saint in your head. It's going, he can have a fight this kid.
He's
all confident and all that. So I thought, take the sheepskin off, Spence. Anyway, he comes into the ring. The same thing. As he comes into the ring, he's spitting and everything else. And I'm in the corner and I go to my trainer. Oh, that's another old one. Took him out in four rounds. It was the same thing. So it was brilliant with this one. So he comes in and he's hitting me. So he's growling and doing stuff inside. He's trying to get inside my head. So it's like, there's a little psychological thing going in there. I'm doing the same and I'm talking to him and whatnot. And then getting to the fourth round, and I know he's started to buckle a little bit. And the same thing, I hit him with a right hand, left hook, and he goes over. Then he gets up, and when he gets up, he's all jumped on him.
Is that a great feeling?
Oh, I've done him again. So as I'm piling into him, the referee's jumped in. Like, he's gone, right? He's only gone, the ref's jumped in. He looks up at the referee and goes, thank you. And I'm like,
oh, it's brilliant. Unbelievable.
He was on top then.
He looks at the referee and goes, thank you. And I'm like, oh, man. So, yeah, we do that. So this was in the January of 1998, that was. So that was my third defence or something in the January. And then we fast forward now to the night I got injured. So
Where was that at?
This is the Royal Albert Hall.
Okay.
So now I'm really, really struggling to make the weight, but I'm like now ranked number one and two in all the governing bodies. So it's there, and they go, right, look, Spence, win a world title here.
And you're still a kid, really, aren't you?
Yeah, Rick Morales was champion. I think Wayne McCulloch was number one. Wow. I was number two. I think, wow. Manny Pacquiao was number 8.
Wow.
Like, yeah, it was mad.
Unbelievable,
like,
yeah.
When I look at it and I look back now and see what they went on to achieve, I go, well, that's what I would have done.
But you didn't think yourself, I suppose you didn't realise what people looked at how good you, people respect you and how good you
Manny Pacquiao weren't Manny Pacquiao then, like, you know, it's just...
So this from, it's over a space of 2 years in. Not even that.
2 years. Yes. 2 years. So like now all of a sudden I'm European champion doing this and I'm going, I've only just turned pro, really.
How long did it take now? How many fights did you have in them 2 years for the bit? How many would
That was after my, so that was then my 14th fight. So I'd had 14 fights.
So how long would it take you now? If you come in the game now, how long would you have, how long would it take 14 fights?
Well,
it would be 2 years, 3 years,
it'd be longer, wouldn't it?
It'd be 6, 7 years.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. It depends how, depends what it is, who's behind you and all that. So. Yeah, so I've had these 14 fights. I'm now 14-0, 10 KOs or so. And I'm boxing a guy called Sergei Devakov. So Devakov had boxed on my undercards before, and it was a routine defensive one. He was mandatory, so I had to box him.
Yep.
I'd seen him, and he was pretty shit, to be fair. But all I thought he was, like one of those, I go, again, he had a good record. He'd drawn for the European title before, but it was someone that I knew that I could deal with because I'd beaten people that had beaten him. And there was some problems, like I had... blood problems outside of the ring going into the fight, and I was like,
what do you mean blood
problems? Yeah, what was that?
Just like with the next partner I had, and there was problems going on surrounding it with, anyway, so long story short, I go into the ring and you go, right, I'm going to get this job done. Your mind's like,
I want to get out of here.
Yeah, but I want to do it, but I'm also struggling to make the weight badly as well, so because I was at that stage in my life where I needed to move up in weight. It was like, right, get this kid out of the way, then we box for the world title. Then we go, move up.
Get me an apartment in Tenerife.
Yeah, exactly that.
Go and visit.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm going into the fight and I'm really struggling to make the weight. And we get to the weigh-in, the day of the weigh-in. Now you're going to say to me, like, you know, how'd that go? And I'll go, like, I remember being down at the gym, skipping the weight off in the morning, but the weigh-in used to be at 6 p.m. at night then, so you had to go. So I hadn't eaten anything anyway, and you had to go all day. And I tell you, like, after when you're dry, it's hard. And we get to weigh-in, do the weigh-in, get off the scales, and then I remember waking up in a hospital bed two and a half, 3 weeks later. That's what I remember. Yeah,
wow.
As mad as that. So
what happened?
Yeah, so what happened, Race, was right. So I remember being on the scales. Then this is what I don't know if I'm piecing this together in my mind after watching it, or whether I go, yeah, because I've got little flashbacks of it. Yeah. I remember, so I told you I'm scared of heights, right?
Yeah.
So in the Royal Albert Hall, they had this big, like, because it was the big homecoming, but boxing hadn't been in the Royal Albert Hall for years and everything else. I had the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra singing me in, doing the Omen music, so that was my boxing name. And they had me coming up on a crane, they lifted me up on a crane as they were singing, and it would go to the top of the Albert Hall, and I'm standing there.
You can't remember it.
No, yeah. No, this is the bits that I remember, right? This is the bits that I think that I do remember. So I'm having these flashbacks. So there's two things that stand out for me. One was I remember coming up on this crane and thinking, this is I, because I didn't know, because we'd done rehearsals, but obviously without the crane. So I'm coming up and the music's going. And as I've done that, I felt the crane go. So as you see me, if you watch the fight back, I think I'm standing there like that.
He's turning to an angel. Yeah.
What's that coming out the bottom of his shorts? Yeah, but I'm standing there like that, right? So I'm scared of heights. I'm thinking, oh, come on, get down. So I sort of vaguely remember that. And then I got in the ring and I tripped over the MC's wire. And as I'm watching it back, I remember that.
Okay.
And that's basically it. And then I remember I was winning the fight. And then we get into... So what happened? This is the mad thing. So we get into the first round. And this is why I don't think I remember any of the fights. So we get in the first round. He hits me with a left hook. And I go down. He catches me with a left hook. And I go down. And you see me like this. And I'm staring at the floor. And when I get up, I'm sort of like wobbly. And the ref lets it go on. It's about 10 seconds. And then the bell goes. But then I get a heavy nosebleed. Now, I ain't got a bone in my nose, really. Like, I was born...
So
the bleed was coming from the brain. But no one was to know that.
Oh.
So I've got a heavy nosebleed and the blood's coming. So my trainer keeps saying to me in between the rounds, you're right. And I'm going, yeah, I'm right. But I was boxing out of character because everything was really weird and I'm trying to hit him and hold and all that sort of stuff. So I'm still just sort of like got my nose in front in the fight. So
you don't remember this?
I don't remember any of it. My trainers, this one, my trainers were telling me.
Yeah.
He says, look, like, I'll keep asking you, you're right, because you don't look right, you're all right. And I'm going, yeah. And he goes, you're winning the fight, so what do we do? You're, like, you're world ranked, this is what's happening.
What are you going to do?
Yeah, he's going, tell you, you're right. And I go, yeah. And bell goes to the 10th round, he comes out, he hits me with a right hand, bang, I go over. So as they go over, I'm on the like all fours again like that, and then I get up and like I don't remember this. It's only from me watching, and then I fall into the referee, and the referee sort of gets me and puts me down. Yeah, he holds me and then puts me down. I'm on the floor, and then there's this guy that was called Eddie Carter. Eddie was my he was my cut man. He used to work locally in my local hospital in Barnet General, but. It's a tragic story, this. So Eddie was my cut man, who was just like one of the best souls. You know, like
they're
you get
very
them human beings.
Cut man.
Yeah, but you're one of them human beings. It's one of the best souls.
Cut man. It's best.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, but he wasn't just my cut man. He used to do my massages. Anytime I got any problems, any injuries, or whatever else, he would take me to the hospital. Like, it was like first class. He was just a diamond geezer. So anyway, so Eddie had researched all this stuff, at, like, because he was one of them
understood
guys.
It.
Understood it medically. He understood everything. He saw me going in and out of like consciousness, and he says the anaesthetist who was in the ring at the time put a line in him and put him to sleep, basically put me into a coma, put me into an induced coma in the ring, as opposed
to... Do you think that was very important to save your life at that time? Or
they'd learnt from Michael Watson, so what happened to Michael Watson was the fight before.
So that was... Also, how long ago was Mark Watson before that?
Michael Watson was in 1990 or 1991,
so
I was 97, so 6 years. And I was the first injury from Michael Watson. So they'd learned from the mistakes. They have anaesthetist. Well, he didn't have that at the time with Watson. And, you know, thankfully, me and Michael are great friends now, because he was... I'll tell you a great story about that after. Yeah. So anyway, they seem to be going in that consciousness that Eddie Carter says, look, put a line in him because I think there's a problem.
Earlier on, I mentioned that today's episode is sponsored by Marching Powder, the new all-action-packed big-screen comedy starring Danny Dyer. And guys, I genuinely believe this could be one of my top films of this year. It has got absolutely everything I love when I go to the cinema. Comedy, action, and even a cheeky bit of romance. For any fans of The Football Factory, I'm sure you'll agree, it's also nice to see Danny Dyer reunited with director Nick Love as they work their magic together once again. I cannot wait to see Dyer as Jack in the film. Anything bold, cheeky and outrageous is always getting my attention. Don't miss out, guys. Why not go with your mates or make a date? Whatever floats your boat. But either way, make sure you get your tickets to Marching Powder, only in cinemas, March 7th.
If you're a facilities manager at a university, you know students rely on the cafeteria for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and the occasional late-night snack. So when a dishwasher breaks down and dirty plates pile up, the mess hall can turn messy in the blink of an eye. Enter Grainger. With over a million industrial-grade products and fast delivery, the product you need now is never far away. So you can turn that dishwasher back into a lean, clean washing machine. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi, this is Freddie Wong from Dungeons & Daddies, and this episode is sponsored by Rocket Money.
Houston.
Blast off. Houston, we have a problem, and that's too many subscriptions that I don't know about because I like to put my credit card number into sites.
Just for the sheer thrill of it.
That's the fundamental problem of the internet and money, and Rocket Money is here to solve that. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that helps find and cancel your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. You can see all those subscriptions that you've accrued over a lifetime of putting your credit card in on the internet in one place. And if you don't want them, just cancel them. With a few taps, Rocket Money can help with that. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/cancelsubs. That's rocketmoney.com/cancelsubs, not submarines.
So they put me into a coma in the ring, take me to the National Neurological Hospital.
Imagine like your friends and family watching it. They must have been...
Oh, but you wouldn't believe it. Yeah, so they take me to... My dad took Finchley ABC, so he took Finchley, like Anthony Joshua and all them. He used to take them to Vegas all the time. So Finchley ABC used to box out in Vegas and done it for many, many years. My dad's not here now. He died in 2013, and they
What's
stopped doing that. Jimmy Oliver, yeah.
Jimmy?
God rest his soul. So he was the founder of, like, obviously, myself and Andy Joshua.
Oh, wasn't he brilliant?
Darren Barker.
How do you know that?
Yeah.
I want to hear this story. Do you reckon if your dad wasn't who he was, would you have been in the boxing?
Oh, definitely not. Yeah. No, it was my dad because I was brought into it. So 7 years of age, I started having my first amateur fight on my 11th birthday.
Brilliant.
You had to be 11 to box. Yeah. My dad took me to fucking Ruislip Working Men's Club, right? Yeah. I swear to God, it's a true story. Ruislip Working Men's Club. And it gets up and I'm boxing this kid, Seamus Kenny's name was, and he was from Burnt Oak, this kid, right? It was his own show.
He knows where he's,
He's had four fights and lost them, yeah? So my dad's taken me as a spare, I'm 32 kilos or something. He puts me up, the kid's about that much taller than me, right? The kid's weighing like 30, 40.
Go on, mate,
like,
Dan, go on,
and
mate.
And my old man's looking, he went, yeah, you're all right, you've gone, fucking, it's one of the hardest fights I've ever had. And at that time, so we
were,
it's unbelievable. I won it on a split decision. I was fucking unbelievable. I went on to have, I think I had 115 amateur fights, and I won about 130, I won about 103, something like that.
Unbelievable.
And that was one of the hardest fights. Wow. I won everything. It was like one of those. So he goes, yeah, go on, son. So we had this thing. But in them days, people were smoking inside. So you can imagine smoking big fucking cigars and stuff. You know what I mean? Yeah, crazy.
So lining you up.
Yeah, so they put a line into me and they take me to the National Neurological Hospital and recognise that I've obviously.
But this is all set up, so you've got they'd have obviously ambulances there in case something
goes wrong. Yeah, that was all through what happened to Michael. It's a change of medical science.
So they
had the ambulances there, they whacked me in the ambulance, take me to the National Neurological. I think they took me to Whips Cross first.
Whips Cross.
And they didn't have the right procedures there, so they took me to the National Neurological in Queen Square and they recognised that I had a bleed on the brain. They call it the golden hour. So what they're doing is if they can get. Do something within the hour, you've got a great chance of survival. So they recognise I've got bleeding and
pain. I remember this all happening. I remember seeing the fight now and all that.
It was huge.
For two weeks, it was massive news every day.
We never had social media. It was front page, back page, every news.
Everyone thought you was gone, really.
Yeah. Oh, well,
What's happened?
Yeah, so I'd go a 3-hour operation to remove a blood clot from the right side of my brain. Look, you can see that little hole there.
Yeah.
So they drilled in there and they cut round. They took. They effectively take
and
the skull
you had a brain
off.
In there.
Well, they fucking. They, do you know what they've done? Do you know what I've done? Listen to some stuff that I was doing on Kiss FM and that before the fight.
Yeah.
I'm going to sound better now. I think I left a spanner in there, I say. I left a spanner resting on saying. Yeah. So, they cut. They take the skull off and put it back and they stapled it back together, basically. So, I have 98 staples going from around here. So.
But your family must have thought, you're not going to be able to walk, or anything. You could have gone either way, you know, you're going to be, you know,
well,
not be able
it,
to be.
Right.
Spenny again.
So my mum's never been to any of my fights, amateur or pro, because she didn't like it. So my mum gets a phone call, look, your son's had an accident, you can imagine she's come up there. But listen to this, the story that I'm telling you about the Las Vegas thing with my old man. So it's the first fight ever, amateur or pro, my dad wasn't at, because he was taking a team to Vegas.
Oh, so he weren't there at the time, so he told your mum and dad.
He had Anthony Joshua and all that over in Vegas, and he gets the phone call, your son's had an injury, so now he's got to come back on the plane,
but he can't look at any papers.
He can't have a look at any papers or anything in case I've died. So he's thinking I can't do it.
Yeah.
So he's flying back from Vegas to try and get to me. So he obviously comes back and I'm in a coma. So he's like, it was crazy. It was just like one of these, it was just like a mad time. So I wake up, I think it was.
Do you remember waking up?
2 weeks later. Yeah, I do. I remember what this is the mad thing. So I don't remember any of the fight. Don't remember anything. I just remember waking up and I'm looking like this. I've got a. Like I've got the thing in your mouth and all that. Cause do you know what I mean? I'm looking like because you're effectively being kept alive by a machine. Do you know what I mean? It's mad. I think I died for 2 weeks. So I wake up. I'm looking around. I'm thinking. Last thing I remember being at the Royal Albert Hall. I'm thinking I must be in the dressing room or something. And I've got all these people around me, but I can see doctors now. I'm thinking, I must have been knocked out. That's what I'm thinking. So I'm still at the fight.
Are you think you have your eye stitched up or something?
You don't know 2 weeks later.
No, I still think it's May the 2nd. It's now May the 14th or 18th or something like that.
My birthday's May the 9th. You missed me fucking birthday. I'm not part of it. You had to wake up 2 weeks after that, either. Don't see your future. You're in your back room.
I'm looking now and I'm going, there's my mum, there's my dad. And I can see Jack and I can see Eddie and like my trainer and my cut man. Tell you a really sad story about the cut man after.
Yeah.
Right, so I see my cut man and all that, and we're there, and I'm looking, I'm thinking, fucking hell, must have been knocked out. And the doctor's going to me, you're okay? And I'm nodding because I can't speak. Yeah. Then they get, like, then all of a sudden they're putting ballpoint pens in my feet and my hands. And I'm like that. They're seeing if I've got any reaction because 2 days after me being in a coma... You'd
be paraplegic, couldn't you?
Well, 2 days after me being in a coma, they're shining a light in my eyes and my pupils stayed dilated, which told them that I was blind, basically. So they're saying to my mum, look, if he comes out, the best way he's going to come out, because the first few days are critical, but the best way he's going to come out, he's going to be paralysed down his left wow. side because I had the injury on the right side. She went, well, let's just get him out and see. So I come out and so like I'm nodding, thinking, why are they asking me all these weird questions? So 2 or 3 days after I'm coming out, I'm still really spacey because I'm getting all these, but I'm getting these terrible headaches because of the, obviously they put half my skull back. So I'm there and I'm like looking, but no one's told me the extent of the injury. So I'm still thinking,
I'll be fighting next week.
No, I thought that's going to be a year. This I'm going to be out for a year, and I'm thinking that in 3 days. So I keep saying to my manager Jess at the time, saying Jess, like, what's going on? Like, am I going to be all right? He went, yeah, don't worry, Spence. You're going to be fine, mate. Just get yourself better and all that. So I'm lying there. So now I'm starting to come around more and more. So after about, I think it was about a week in hospital or whatever, they take the catheter out.
Oh.
Yeah.
Just made my belly button go funny.
Yeah.
Oh. You know, right? So that's worse than the fight.
Worse than fighting that kid when you were 11.
Exactly. So they take the catheter out and... Now I'm in the process, right, Spence, we're going to start getting you to walk again. I'm thinking, what is going on here? So
you don't know the extent of...
No one's told me because of the trauma that I've been through.
Well, and because they don't want you to panic
Of course,
or whatever,
like a case of panic or... I said, right, Spence, we're going to start walking. All right, whatever. So get up and I've got this Zimmer frame. Can I stand up here or not?
Yeah, go on.
You're still being shot.
Right, so I've got this Zimmer frame. So I've got the Zimmer frame, and now my legs ain't there at all. I'm thinking, then my legs are not working. And so I'm going, what's going on here? So no one's still, because obviously no one's told me the extent. So I'm doing these small steps. So anyway, we do that. So this is now the first time I'm going, I'm lying now, go. Because I've been looking at the toilet, which is like, let's just say by that wall there, and I'm going, people don't realise how lucky they are to get this toilet after I'm doing this walking thing. I'm looking, I go, I need to go to the toilet, because I've taken the cap around. And they went, all right, Spence, here, go on. But no one's still told me about this injury, right? As in that, so I'm going now. I know I've got headaches, but I don't, because I'm spaced out and whatnot.
You don't know what's going on.
So anyway, I take the Zimmer frame, and I go to the toilet. I can't remember who was with me at the time. Someone's obviously with me. And I'm walking to the toilet, and I get in there, and there's a mirror like this.
Oh, and that's the first time you...
And I've seen it, so my hair's like, say it is now, but they've only shaved it, Ray, down one side where they've done the thing. So it's the shape of a fucking tennis ball, this thing. It was unbelievable. It went from here right the way round to here. So I'm looking there, and it was grossly swollen out there, and I looked in the mirror, and I just started crying. I thought, that's when I knew my boxing career was over. I'm like, I'm done.
You're thinking about boxing career, not about your health.
Yeah, because I'm thinking I'm healthy.
I can't box anymore.
Yeah. So I'm looking in the mirror and I start crying. I think, fucking hell, like, now I just want to look normal.
You're much better now.
But it was so bad. Yeah. It was so bad. And so I'm thinking, right now, I just want to be normal again. Now I've got to go through this process of walking, talking, everything else. So
then once you see yourself, then they could be honest with you?
Yeah, exactly that. They look expensive. Career's over, maybe. Then I'm sort of crying.
Pretty fair, anyway. You had a fight. You had a career, though, didn't you?
No, it was great. It was short-lived, but it was great. So now I'm going, right, so now it's all about the rebuilding process. So I'm on this ward, right? I'm on this ward with loads of other patients that have got similar sort of injuries. And I've got one geezer that's, like, over one side, this guy, it's Abdul, and I don't know what his problem... I don't know what his history was, but I'm sort of waving, oh, beer, and he's shouting. I think, I can't be doing this geezer, my head's hurting. And I've got this other guy next to me called Dave. He's a hippie guy, right? So I'm thinking, this geezer seems all right. It's like the odd, like, how are you doing, mate? Yeah, anyway, but everyone's just trying to rebuild their lives and whatnot. So we didn't really chat. So one day I'll get up and I'm really stressed out this day. And I'm going, like, I really need to, like, because now I'm realising more and more that my life's totally changed. And I'm thinking, what am I going to do here? I'm 23 years of age. I just turned 23. My life's over. What am I going to do?
I didn't realise you were that young, mate.
So just turned 23, 2 months after my 23rd birthday. So I'm getting up, so I'm walking down the ward and I'm just trying to get myself back together. So I sit down and I'm like, Dave, how are you, mate? Like, yeah, good. Yeah, we're chatting away. And he says to me, yeah, good, man. Yeah, and he goes, listen, do you want a banana? And I'm no, I'm all right, mate. Anyway, so I start chatting. He ain't got no bananas there, right? So he's like, yeah, look. Fancy some spaghetti bolognese, man. And I went,
what?
Yeah. Nah, that's it. I'm done. I'm out. I'm done. I'd say, like, Spencer, calm down. You've got 98 statements. No, I'm done. So all of a sudden, I
he
see
promised
this,
me a banana.
I see this 6 foot six figure walking down the corridor. It's my old manager, Jess Harding, right? And he's like, what's going on? I went, Jess, fucking get me out of this place. It's full of nutters. I'm gone. Anyway, so it's just like, look, don't worry, I'll calm him down. And he said, look, he's going to have to sign something. He can't, just, honestly, yeah, he can't leave. He's just had a blood clot removed from his brain. I put a tracksuit on. He's taking me downstairs. He thinks I'll take him downstairs. Take him downstairs. I went, let's get a taxi. I want to get a taxi. So we get in a taxi. And it's me, him, and Eddie Carter, my cut man. We're in the taxi, and the radio's playing. And one whatever song was on at the time, Jess says to me, you started singing the song. So then I started thinking, oh, he's all right. He can remember stuff and all that, because I'm still very slow.
So they don't know how you're going to respond, how you're going to recover, anyway.
So I'm in the taxi, and he takes me down to Chinatown, right? So we go down, just here. how weird is that? It's just like where we are now. So he takes me to Chinatown, and I said, I want to get the same to eat. I want Chinese, I want some proper food. And he's got right,
no bananas. Yeah.
And so I go, he goes, where do you want to go? I went, let's go in that restaurant there. So I said, he said, all right, then yeah, but as this music's playing, I'm start singing this song. So like Eddie, who's my cut,
you can't remember this. Can you remember this now?
Yeah, I remember this. I remember all this now. Yeah.
You remember singing in taxi?
Oh, yeah, and all that. So I can't remember what the song was, but Eddie's like to Jess, oh, it's good. Like, he remembers the words of the song. So he's all right. But Eddie was like the guy that effectively saved my life because he told me he needed to
put the arm in.
So we go into the Chinese. We open the door to the Chinese. You've got to go down a flight of stairs like that now. They're going, oh, no, we can't. So I'm walking down the stairs. I'm going down the stairs.
One in front of you, one behind you.
We had the Chinese, now I've calmed down, and I'm like, right, I want to go back. So they drive me back to the hospital. I get back in my pyjamas, and then the rebuilding process starts again. And I'm staying there for another couple of weeks, and then I'm released, and that's how to...
So since then to out, what was the sort of length until you, like, now, perfect, until you was okay in yourself?
Well, this is crazy, so... I come out of the hospital, so that was in, what was that, May the 2nd. So I come out, let's say I come out at sort of like end of May time. So then I wanted to do like...
And you've still got the...
Yeah, it's the full scar.
Yeah, but I mean, people can see it and you still...
Oh, still had the staples in me at this time. I had to go back out and get them all pulled out. Wow. It was like horrendous, So anyway, you had this rebuilding process to go to, and I had to go to Knapsbury Brain... institution and get my head checked all the time and all that. So I was given the all clear. I thought, right, I've got, what am I going to do? I need to do something to motivate myself. So I've done the London Marathon. I run for the National Neurological Hospital and the brain.
Well, I bet you remember that.
Oh, I've got to tell you.
I bet you remember that.
Brilliant.
So
well done.
Listen to this, right? This is a great story and all. So I do the London Marathon and my mate at the time, who was in the ring actually when I got injured, was a guy called Tony Mortimer, who used to be E17. So he was a good mate of mine at the time. So Tony says, I'll do that marathon with you. Oh. And I went, yeah, go on. And so I know he ain't training, right? But I am training. So I go, people are going to be looking at me because at the time it was big.
And you're a big influence.
See how he's getting on.
Big influence for everyone.
So Tony's like, oh, how's that training going? He's going, yeah, we're all right. Anyway, so we get there, start line and thing. I think, right, I'm impressing here. I've got to do something big. You know what I mean? Because like, I want to show people that I'm making a recovery. Yeah. I'm all right. This is like the following April. So we had that. So anyway, we start off and Tony's running. I'm running with him. I think, come, Tony, can we speed up a little bit? After about 3 miles, he goes, oh, go on, mate, you go.
Oh, yeah.
You go, right? Oh, no, it weren't actually. It was about 10 miles, right? And I'm going slow. I'm going, Tony, we need to go. And
come on.
We had one of them big things come running past us. And I thought, at that stage.
He's adjusting the rhinoceros going past you.
And I went, Tony, I've got to go, mate, because I'm going to be getting hammered here. He went, yeah, you go, right? So I went and done it, and I finished it in about 4 hours 30 or something. No, that was the first one. The second one I done it in about 3 hours 40 after, because I had to redo it. Yeah. So I done it about 4 hours 30, so I'm thinking, fucking hell, that was hard. Like, with their emotions running down the mall because of what I was doing it for and everything else. I get home, I go to bed, wake up, I ring him up and like, oh, look, Tony, I'm so gutted you didn't do it, mate. And like, you know, thanks for doing it anyway. What are you talking about, mate? I've just come over the finish line. He'd done it in 8 hours 52.
He finished
third from last, but he got it done. He was on crutches for 2 weeks. What a geezer, though.
So do you still have tests now, or you completely 100%?
Completely 100%. But like, yeah, so like, yeah, but I'd done it the following year because I wanted to do a serious time. I'd done it in like 3:30 or something like that. Just to say, just to, for myself, that was my motivation. It's 99
and 2000, that was. I've got a quick, I'm sorry, we're doing technology now. Like, you know what I mean? What the, like, well, the geniuses. People look after you in hospital.
I spoke to the doctor and said, how does Michael come out like that?
I've
come out
like this.
We've had the same operation.
But they're thinking about what's happened to Michael.
Yeah.
Well, so when you're in a coma, they're thinking, well, you're going to be the same as Michael.
They said, look, it can happen to 10 of you. But he said, one, it's about how quick they can operate on you. You was like, you was inside the hour, so you done that.
The cut man was there. The cut man was there.
Yeah, but he said, but like, only he knows how you come through. Yeah. It's not, he said, that's just pot luck. We don't know how you're going to wake up. You can do it to 10 of you, and you'll all come out differently when you've just come out the way you've come out.
So it weren't one punch in combination, but you don't
know? No, it was one punch where obviously...
Was that the first one? You started bleeding?
Yeah, so you've got thousands of blood vessels in and around your brain, and your blood vessels, when you get dehydrated... Lose their elasticity.
So that's what it was.
So they're like elastic bands. So when you're tight, so they come like bits of straw. When I got punched, one of them snaps. And that's the bleed. So there's as the fight goes on, the blood starts clotting.
But today, is there any change in the rules? Is there any change in losing weight?
They have weight checks and all that now, where they never back then. Like, but now they have weight checks and you've got to be within side 5 pounds, within side 3 pounds. So they do it. That's what I'm saying. There's less injury now.
So what happened to you is change rules.
Oh, change rules.
And what's happened to Michael Watson...
Changed medical science, really, yeah. Yeah, they learned so much and, like, you know, so much from that. You know, I always owe it to... So, with Michael Watson, it was like, he was my strength in getting through. So, I'm looking at him, and I went to meet him, and...
I've met him a couple of times, lovely.
This is the question I want to ask you. So, after you've come out of the operation and obviously trained at London Marathon, how long did it take you to get over knowing that you could never box again?
Oh, it took me. That was a really dark period of my life. Like probably three or four years where I went through like dark times. You know what I mean? Drinking, partying, just trying to rediscover myself because I've.
It's like being a market trader, isn't it?
Yeah. The only thing I never had in the stall.
They've only got upper brain as well.
It was a very very dark time. But like I say, like Michael.
But you accepted it. You accepted it.
Yeah. Michael Watson was a big help for me getting through that because I looked at him and he was my pillar of strength, if you like. So I asked that question to Michael Watson. Like when I first met him and everything, I was like, and so he's chatting, I was going, such an inspirational guy. And I said, Michael, how did you get through that? And he was like, he said, I'll tell you what happened with me. He said, remember when I got wheeled onto the Arsenal pitch and all that? I said, yeah. He said, well, when I was in the hospital, I was like that. And like I did when I got wheeled onto the at Highbury, he said, like, I was there and I was paralysed from literally the neck down, couldn't move. He said, but I knew what was going on in here.
Yeah.
He said, so people thought I was just actually gone. So I was like, he said, but I knew what was going on.
Meant the world to him.
And he said, Muhammad Ali come to visit me in the hospital. And I went, go on. And he went, yeah, he said, and that was the beginning of my rebuilding process. And I was like, wow. And this is the beginning, and this will all link up in a minute. I goes, go on. And he goes, yeah, come to me. And he said, you're the champ, you're da-da-da, and you can do this. And he said, but I'm paralysed. I'm just looking at him. And he goes, and that gave me so much strength. He goes, because he was my boxing idol. So I looked at Michael and I went, do you know what? I think you're my boxing idol. I said, because you're my pillar of strength. And I said, and you're my Muhammad Ali. And that was basically the beginning of our relationship. Yeah. So we both started crying and like, and then like sort of like, he helped me through those dark times when I was like feeling really low and whatnot. I ended up doing the last mile of the marathon with him when he done that and all that. But I'm going, if it wasn't for you, and I say it to his face, I say, Michael, if it weren't for you, Michael, I went,
that's getting me emotional now.
I wouldn't be where I am. And Michael said to me, and this, it's mad, man. Michael went, do you know what? Spencer, I hated the person that I was. He said, but I love the person I am now. And that's what it is. And he goes, you know, and he goes, can you see what God's given me? He said, like, God give me the gift to be able to give you your life back. He said, because what happened to me, he'd done that. And I was just like, you know, it's just like one of those things. It's just like absolutely crazy.
Can I just say now, I know this is a podcast. I mean, this is the most amazing conversation I've had on a podcast.
The
most amazing conversation I've had in my life.
Yeah, mate, listen.
This is unbelievable.
That's the best.
And the best thing about it.
Yeah, and then
you need to tell the town, old mate.
Absolutely. And to finish this off is another sad one. So that guy Eddie Carter,
the cut man, who saved your life, really.
Absolutely. So I then see Eddie. He used to live quite near me. So one time I see him, and he was going through a lot of trouble. I saw him, and he was going into a shop, and it was right near Finchley ABC, where my dad's gym was. So I'm going into shot. Oh, Eddie, I ain't seen you for ages. How are you, mate? And he looks a bit down, and he's smelt a drink and whatnot. And I'm like, what's going on, mate? He's going, oh, so I'm all good, Spence. But he was all a little bit jittery and all that. Didn't recognise what was going on, but he was having like tough mental health problems. And he worked at Barnet General, and he would go up there and say, listen, I've got problems. And they were going, yeah, right, Ed, just to say it. They didn't recognise what he had, right? They didn't recognise the symptoms that he had. And then I know what it was, just 2 weeks after I saw him or whatever, then we got a phone call.
Go on, mate. That's right.
Go on, bro.
Go on.
Got a phone call saying that he took his own life. He'd gone drown himself, yeah.
A guy that
saved so many lives, saved my life, but he spent a life saving lives, and no one could recognise what was going on. Do you know what I mean? And his family were desperately trying to get him help, and no one would help him.
He's remembered today, though, mate, isn't he?
Yeah.
We remember him today.
So, yeah, and that was it. Yeah, sad ending to a beautiful human being, but...
Mate, what? Yeah. What? That's fucking best...
Mate, that's the best
story I've ever heard.
It's not. A podcast about it. It's the best conversation I've ever sat down and listened to. Mm. Because it's one of them that you're on top of the world. You're going to be on top of the world, and all of a sudden, boom.
Yeah, and then it's that rebuilding process.
And then your mum's on there. Your dad's in Vegas. Your dad's seen every fight. And what would you be like, your dad? And you've got to get back. It's not like you've got an hour away.
It's fucking unreal.
You're in America, and you don't know what's about. Well, I remember that. I thought you're dead, mate. I'm not.
Yeah.
So I remember watching it. I thought, fucking hell.
I'm not a believer.
You was our superstar. You was our young boxing star.
I'm not a religious guy, but I know that somebody up there was with me that day.
I'm not a religious guy, but listen to me. The amount of times I've said to God, get me out of this situation. I promise I'll never do it again. We've all been there, fam.
I can imagine how your dad felt as well, because last year I was managing West Ham for a charity TST game out there.
Not the West Ham, obviously.
It's West Ham Legends.
Because that would have been a good team then.
Yeah, so I still went on Fernando.
Who did you support, Spen, by the way?
I'm Tottenham. No.
When I was out there, I got the phone call from my wife. She's pregnant by twins, saying that if I don't get the twins out in the next 24 hours, one of them is definitely going to die. And if the operation goes wrong,
you're in America.
I fly back early, didn't I?
It's like, terrible.
That flight, not knowing anything, not going over Wi-Fi, not knowing my wife was alive, and my baby's alive, was the worst flight of my life. Yeah. You know, so imagine
this is apparently, he's actually, my dad like slept boxing inside, taking the kids to Vegas, doing that, train Joshua, all of those. So he comes back, and obviously I've fucking got a machine pumping my chest. Mate. This thing, I've got tubes coming out my head, and it's like, it's fucked. So he apparently walked into the hospital, just collapsed on the floor. Like, he's a big man, he was a big strong man. He collapsed on the floor, just like a baby. Yeah, like you can imagine, like you just go, you know, it was just one of them, he was going, oh, son, I don't think I'm going to go. And I was like, go, Dad, this kid's nothing. I've been like, don't worry about that. We'll look, folks, it's just one of them things. But yeah, Eddie, bless his soul, like, you know.
God bless him.
If it weren't for him, I wouldn't be who I am today, so.
But he's got memories. He's got memories. Anyway.
Yeah.
What an amazing podcast that is.
Definitely, yeah.
Honestly.
I need to give you a cuddle for that. Come in, mate.
That's amazing.
You're the man. All
right,
amazing, mate.
Yeah, cheers.
Brilliant. Absolute pleasure.
Wow.
Amazing.
What a story. Spencer Olivier, what a legend. And I think we should, you know, just be grateful. Like, I mean, I've lost the words a little bit, you know, Eddie the Cut Man.
Eddie the Cut Man.
Yeah, what a legend. And from being at the top, the pinnacle, to having everything in front of you, to waking up 2 weeks later. And what a story. And going from dark places to looking where you are now. Mate, you're an inspiration. And thank you for coming on.
You are. Thank you very much, mate.
Yeah.
Honestly, you're a good man. Very good man.
And that is the...
If you want to get this podcast, where'd you go?
That is a Men's Room podcast. Get it on YouTube.
Hey, race. There you go.
So if you enjoyed that podcast, there's loads more. The Men's Room with TalkSport is fantastic. The 17th hardest footballer of all times. And me, Tom Skinner. Ever.
Earlier on, I mentioned that today's episode is sponsored by Marching Powder, the new all-action-packed big-screen comedy starring Danny Dyer. And guys, I genuinely believe this could be one of my top films of this year. It has got absolutely everything I love when I go to the cinema. Comedy, action, and even a cheeky bit of romance. For any fans of the Football Factory, I'm sure you'll agree, it's also nice to see Danny Dyer reunited with director Nick Love as they work their magic together once again. I cannot wait to see Dyer as Jack in the film. Anything bold, cheeky and outrageous is always getting my attention. Don't miss out, guys. Why not go with your mates or make a date? Whatever floats your boat. But either way, make sure you get your tickets to Marching Powder. Only in cinemas, March 7th.
If you're a facilities manager at a university, you know students rely on the cafeteria for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and the occasional late-night snack. So when a dishwasher breaks down and dirty plates pile up, the mess hall can turn messy in the blink of an eye. Enter Grainger. With over a million industrial-grade products and fast delivery, the product you need now is never far away. So you can turn that dishwasher back into a lean, clean washing machine. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.